It's time for Northwestern Outdoors Radio, the show focusing on fishing, hunting, outdoor recreation, destinations, and conservation in the region where you live and play. Northwestern Outdoors is brought to you by Max Lure Company, Sportsman's Warehouse, and Wallowa County. And now, let's see what's going on in the field and on the water with your host, John Cruz.
Welcome to your weekend. I'm glad you're here, but I've got to admit, as I sit here with my broken but mending leg in my studio, I am a little jealous because I know right now some of you are trolling for coho salmon in Coos Bay, Oregon, or maybe casting for them on the Skagit River or one of its tributaries in northwest Washington. Others in Washington are heading to the woods because the general deer hunting season opens this weekend. Still other listeners are probably driving in central Montana or southeast Wyoming, getting ready for a day of pheasant hunting, or maybe shouldering a shotgun and beginning that long climb uphill after some chukar in Idaho. It's not just fishing and hunting either. I'm guessing some of you are just planning a fall drive today in the country to see the amazing colors of our changing landscape at this time of year, or going for a hike on a favorite trail before the first snows of the season put an end to hiking. And some of you are also hunting birds or wildlife, and not with a bow or a rifle necessarily, but with a camera. My hat's off to you, no matter which one of these fun activities you're enjoying in the Northwest today, as well as many others. This week on Northwestern Outdoors Radio, we've got a great lineup of guests for you. One of them is Chris Milgate, an award-winning outdoors journalist from Idaho who has a film out you really should see called Ocean to Idaho. The documentary follows a run of Chinook salmon from the mouth of the Columbia River near Astoria, Oregon, all the way to the Yankee Fork of the Salmon River in central Idaho, where just a few of these Chinook made it back last year. In addition to telling you about the film, Chris will share her thoughts on things we can do to help save our salmon. Pro angler Ted Beach is back for another extended Max Minute, and this time he's going to tell you what his go-to lures are when it comes to fishing a tournament for walleye. Now, walleye are fun, but so are largemouth bass, especially big Florida strain largemouth bass that can get over 10 pounds in size. And one place you can catch some of these really big fish, and lots of them too, are at a couple of lakes in Mexico near Mazatlan. I'm heading there in May, the 8th through the 13th to be exact, and my host, Michael Whitlow, with Anglers End International, will tell you more about these fantastic fisheries where you'll likely catch the biggest bass of your life and maybe more bass than you've ever caught in your life on one fishing trip, and get treated like a king or a queen along the way. By the way, there is room for a few more guests on this trip I'm taking too, in case you want to come along. Last but not least, we'll get a chance to chat with Roseanne McHenry about her new book, Trip Tales, From Family Camping to Life as a Ranger. And I think you're going to love some of the stories she'll be sharing, along with some sage advice about how you can work or volunteer at our state and national parks too. Throw in our ever-popular Sportsman's Warehouse Trivia Question of the Week, and as always, we've got a fun and informative hour of the great outdoors headed your way. So, let's kick it off, as we do every week, with another edition of Sportsman Spotlight.
Beware of harmful algal blooms while hunting waterfowl. David Sparks, Sportsman Spotlight. Algal blooms can be toxic for hunting dogs, and you, for that matter, and may be present in early fall. With waterfowl seasons opening up all over the country, fish and game officials are reminding hunters to beware of harmful algal blooms and protect themselves and their canine companions by following recommendations from fish and game officials. Here's fish and game official Roger Phillips.
You know, it's something that we have experienced when we have this hot weather. We get these things, and some of these cyanobacteria are pretty nasty to people and especially pets. And I think one of the things, this is pretty well documented and publicized during summer, but I think less so when we get into late summer and early fall, where folks are out there with their hunting dogs who might not have been paying attention to it during the summer. So we're just trying to bring that to folks' attention. So if your dogs are out there and you see green looking water that's kind of stagnant, just keep them away and understand what this stuff is and what the potential hazards of it are.
If your dog gets into it, Roger, what are the symptoms?
They can have vomiting, diarrhea, weakness, difficulty breathing, seizures, and even death. Definitely something that people want to pay attention to.
So green, scummy water, watch out. Hope you enjoyed Sportsman Spotlight. I'm David Sparks.
Wheat growers, what's on your seed? Syngenta's five-way combination seed treatment provides proven protection against a broad range of seedling diseases and pests. Cruiser Insecticide offers below and above ground pest control of things like aphids against barley yellow dwarf. Along with the Cruiser Vigor Effect and Vibrance Fungicide Rooting Power, Syngenta's seed treatments encourage plants to develop stronger root systems for improved performance and higher yields. To learn more, contact your local seed supplier. Always read and follow label instructions.
Did you know there are health risks when children are forced to wear masks in school? I'm Whitney, one of the concerned moms who started UnmaskOurKidsWA.com. We're a nonpartisan group of parents and residents in Washington State who believe masks are a parental decision, never a mandate. Join our email list for ways you can take a stand, plus have access to the science on how masks could harm your child. Where there's risk, there must be choice. That's UnmaskOurKidsWA.com. WA for Washington.
The preceding ad does not necessarily reflect the opinion of Northwestern Outdoors Radio and is aired in conjunction with Sportsman Spotlight. Welcome back to Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz. We've got Chris Milgate on the line. She put together a really interesting film called Ocean to Idaho, following Chinook salmon from the Pacific Ocean at the mouth of the Columbia River all the way to their spawning grounds in central Idaho. And you can watch this film right now. We'll tell you how in just a minute. Chris, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, John. It's good to be with you.
So we had you on when you were making this movie, but I want to remind our listeners again about what went into it. You made it during the pandemic, and you literally followed the salmon from Astoria to Idaho. Tell our listeners a little bit about the process you went through to get this movie made.
Well, salmon migrate 850 miles from the Oregon coast to the Idaho wilderness, and the finish line is just a few hours from my house, mile 850. And it's a tributary of the Salmon River. I saw it, and I saw fish there a few years ago, and I thought, what on earth does this migration route look like, and how do I figure out how to show everyone? And so to pull it off, I planned a route to migrate home with the fish, and it happened to be during the pandemic, so I had to do it alone, but I was never lonely. I didn't have time to be lonely. And I lived and worked out of a truck and camper combo all summer and followed the fish home, and then I met people along the way that I interviewed in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and talked to them about all different aspects about how the salmon are so important to the Pacific Northwest and what they mean to people and what the whole Columbia River Basin means to people. And that's a working system. So you have a lot of feedback from people with different perspectives. You have farmers and fishers, dam builders and dam breakers, and they're all in this film. And it's all about how these fish try to move through the system with us right on top of them.
It's no mystery that our salmon and steelhead stocks are struggling. And 850 miles, that's a long, long way for a salmon to go. Historically, what is the run in terms of how many salmon are supposed to go to this tributary of the Salmon River, and how many actually made it there in 2020?
The Yankee Fork of the Salmon River is 850 miles from the Pacific Ocean, and that was the finish line for my project. Historically, 3,000 Chinook salmon made it back to the Yankee Fork every year. In 2020, 37 Chinook salmon made it to the Yankee Fork.
Wow. Wow. That's about as depressing as the sockeye numbers we see every year heading up into Idaho to Stanley Lake. You know, having done this project, I'm sure you got some really strong ideas about how we can increase these runs, whether it be sockeye or Chinook salmon or steelhead. And I know there's no one silver bullet. You can't just breach the four lower Snake River dams and say we're done. But what are a couple things you think we should do here in the Northwest to save our salmon and steelhead stocks?
When Ocean to Idaho debuted and started circulating among other people watching it in settings in person and on screen, I realized right down to the very basics that people are intrigued by kings of the Pacific Northwest, by these salmon. And so while we can think that there's all these big, complicated ideas of how we can fix the system to bring the fish back, for a lot of people, it's as simple as connecting with our natural resources. And once they connect with them, they watch this film, and then they come up to me afterward and they say, I had no idea that this was going on, and I had no idea that I have an impact on it. And when I turn on my lights and I get power from water, and the water is for those fish at the same time, it's more almost like the awareness of it is the first step, because people have no idea what's going on. And then even something as simple as, I'm not going to throw my gum wrapper out anymore because now I realize that goes in the water and those fish have to swim through it.
Right.
That's just simple. Don't put litter in the river anymore. Stick your feet in the creek and connect with it, but don't dump your trash in it.
Right.
And for a lot of people, that is the first step. That's the first idea of how do we fix this problem. And then it grows from there. And you get into some huge, complicated ideas of how we make this system work for farms and for fish, because the reality is it's going to have to work for both. Mm-hmm. We don't get to take one or the other. It's going to have to be both. So there's a lot of different ideas for how we can try to figure out how to do that.
Well, you're right. And, you know, specifically when it comes to dam breaching, this really gets set up in terms of winners and losers. The fish could be the winners. The farmers could be really big losers, depending on how or if this is ever done. But there's all sorts of other issues, too, both downstream and upstream when it comes to predation of the smolt, predation of the adults, whether it's through birds or sea lions or fish. You know, you've got habitat destruction. You've got habitat loss. I mean, you've got warming waters. So many things. What are some other takeaways that you think in your own mind, if you were the czar of salmon and steelhead and you had free hand to do whatever you wanted to bring these runs back, what would you do?
Oh, that's a fun question.
It's good to be the queen. What would you do as the queen of salmon and steelhead in the Northwest to bring them back?
I would bring them back. But I think it takes a lot of different things happening to bring them back. And regardless of all the things we do, we now have climate change pushing down on our natural resources, and that causes problems that we may have no control over at this point.
Right.
So we may be able to try everything that we humanly can, all these man-made things to try to bring back the natural fish, but they may not work because we've got this other natural phenomenon now sitting on top of us, which is climate change. So I think that some of the things that are really fascinating about the issue, and you want to make sure you don't confuse people and get buried in the fight, right?
Right.
It's solutions. We want to be optimistic about what we can do here. And I am optimistic, even after seeing what I saw for every mile of that journey. But really what it comes down to is these fish were programmed and built and made, created to swim from the Idaho to the ocean, to grow big in the ocean, and then go from the ocean back to Idaho. They were made to do that. That journey has turned from a few months long to a month long. And there's a lot of things in the way. All of us, 8 dams, the fish that come back to the Yankee Fork go through 4 rivers and 3 states just to lay eggs once. And so they were meant to do it, but there's a lot in their way. The system looks a lot different now than it did a century ago. And a lot of that has to do with dams. And a lot of times the black eye for this whole issue goes to the power company and hydropower. And if we took out the dams, we'd save the fish. But we got to replace the power. But the reality of the situation is, a century ago, hydropower was the brilliance of the time. These were feats of engineering. They turned on our lights. 100 years later, we have technology that works in a better way that maybe we don't have to have just dams to turn on our lights. So it's not going to be necessarily the power that's going to be a struggle. It's going to be the farms. They need irrigation and they barge. Those two things need to be fixed so that you can save the farms and then you can save the fish.
Interesting. And we could talk so much more about this, but let's talk about where folks can see your movie. Now, I understand there is going to be an in-person showing of this in Boise on October 28th. Where and when is that going to happen?
And we are in Boise on October 28th at the Egyptian Theater in downtown Boise. And tickets are on sale for that at Egyptian Theater. So you can order tickets to see that. And I'll have books there. There's a book called My Place Among Fish. That's the backstory on following fish solo during the pandemic. That'll be there. There'll be question and answer times. I will talk about what it was like to fall apart on the migration route, just like the fish fall apart. And then we'll watch the film. So that's the 28th. And also people can watch it online if they want. Go to oceantoidaho.com and you can buy a virtual movie ticket and watch it at home. If you're not comfortable being out with people yet, go ahead and watch it at home in your slippers and pajamas.
Well, and for all of us that are listening to KBOI 670 out of Boise today, that's probably your best bet. So OceanToIdaho.com, that's the website to go to. How much does it cost to go ahead and buy this movie and stream it on our laptops or desktop computers?
$8.99, so you can watch it at home, and then you'll receive a password that gives you access for a window of time so that you can watch it at your convenience inside that window.
Okay, and obviously, if you've got a smart TV, this will work too. So OceanToIdaho.com, that's the website to go to see this film, Ocean to Idaho, and follow the 850-mile journey of the Chinook salmon from the mouth of the Columbia River at Astoria all the way to central Idaho, the Yankee Fork of the Salmon River. Sounds like a wonderful movie. Can't wait to see the whole thing. And Chris, thanks so much for joining us today to share the story of these fish and your thoughts about them on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
From a bull elk ripping a bugle across the valley to wing beats on a duck marsh, public lands and waters are integral to our outdoor heritage. Become a member of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers and stand up for our public lands and waters. Visit backcountryhunters.org today.
Natural wonders, beaches and coves, majestic forests and scenic vistas are waiting for you at the Tillamook Coast. Lace up your hiking boots, grab your camera, and come to Northwest Oregon. Find out more at tillamookcoast.com.
Back with more of the great outdoors on Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
It's time for another Max Minute, brought to you every week by Max Lure. With us again, tournament pro Ted Beach, who's also a Max Lure pro staffer. Ted, last week we talked about the different walleye tournament circuits available around the greater Northwest. This week I want to talk about what you like to use when you're fishing. I mean, every tournament angler has a go-to lure when the going gets tough. What is yours?
Probably the worm harness, double whammy worm harness. That's basically it. I will use Wally Pops. They work really well. Those are a Max product. I get a lot of components from Max and tie my own colors up and everything, John, and seem to do real well with a two-hook worm harness.
So the double whammy is pretty much the iconic walleye offering from Max Lure. Has that smile blade, has some beads, and that double hook setup. The Wally Pop's a little bit different because it actually has some pill floats on it. What does that do?
John, it's actually got a rubber tube, and in that rubber tube, there is a pill float in there, but it's also got some stack beads to hold that together. You can pull out that top stack bead, and it becomes a scent chamber. You squirt your favorite scent in there, put the bead back in, and now you have a slow-release scent chamber.
Bob Loomis, if you're listening today, I have no idea why you have never told me this before in the last 10-plus years we've been doing Max Minutes. But Ted, thank you for doing so. I'm going to catch more fish with my Wally Pop now. Folks, if you want to find out more about Max Lure offerings, whether it be the double whammy or the Wally Pop or components like the Smile Blade, the patented Mylar Blade that Max Lure has, just go to their website at maxlure.com or look for all these products at a sporting goods store near you. Thanks, Ted.
Don't forget the Mac Attack. It's free. Go online, sign up for it. There's a lot of good information in that.
Very true, Ted. The Mac Attack Indeed online newsletter, free of charge. Sign up for it at maxlure.com.
Wedding rings? I've had as many as I've got fingers on my hands. I started off with the Wedding Ring Classic, of course. That smooth blade from Indiana, that beaded body, the sharp hook. We caught a lot of trout together over the years, but then that patented Smile Blade wedding ring, well, let's just say it took my fancy, along with the trout and the kokanee. Now I'm going through this new age sort of phase. You might say I'm hooked on the new high UV colored wedding rings, and I'm catching more fish than ever. So yeah, I've got a whole bunch of wedding rings. You should get some too. Don't look at the jewelry store though. These wedding ring spinners are from Max Lure, and you'll find them at the sporting goods store near you or online at maxlure.com.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter, full of the gear you need to succeed this hunting season. Firearms, ammo, archery equipment, decoys, clothing, boots, and more. You'll find it all at Sportsman's Warehouse. Better still, the knowledgeable staff can help you with tips and frequent in-store seminars, all designed to help you bag a trophy or a limit. Find a location near you or shop online today at sportsmans.com.
From a bull elk ripping a bugle across the valley, to wing beats on a duck marsh, public lands and waters are integral to our outdoor heritage. Become a member of Backcountry Hunters and Anglers and stand up for our public lands and waters. Visit backcountryhunters.org today.
You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz, and if you're one of those people that just loves an endless summer, I know you've got to be a little bit down in the dumps. Despite the beautiful fall weather, we are seeing more great days, we are seeing more rain, and you might be wanting to go somewhere where it's a little bit warmer, a little bit sunnier, and where the fish are biting really well. Well, that place would be Mexico, specifically Lake El Salto and Lake Picachos, and Anglers Inn International has got lodges at both places. With us here to tell you more about fishing for bass south of the border is Mike Whitlow. Mike, great to have you on the air.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Good to talk to you again.
Lake El Salto, everyone says you have to go to Mecca at least once in your life. And if you're a bass angler, Lake El Salto is probably Mecca. Why is this lake north of Mazatlan in Mexico so special for bass anglers?
This lake is full of Florida strain largemouth that will bend your rods and straighten hooks. There's probably been more double-digit fish caught in this lake than any other lake in the world, and we manage it as a trophy fishery. The average fish in there is probably 4 to 7 pounds, and to go down and just catch them one after another, it's just, that's what makes it so good. The tilapia, very nutrient-rich. Those bass grow big, grow half a pound, three-quarters of a pound a year, and it just makes it a tremendous fishery year after year after year.
Now, I understand the lake record is 18 pounds. 10-pound fish are definitely attainable for anglers on a trip down there. You know, if you book a four-day trip, what are your chances of landing the biggest bass of your lifetime? And, you know, for most of us here in the Northwest, anything over six is a trophy.
Well, I host several groups a year, and I'm blessed I get to take down a lot of folks to this lake, and I can't tell you how many personal bests, and a lot of times it's in that 7, 8, 9. A lot of people hardly ever fish before. 2 pounds is their biggest fish and come home with a double digit. But lots of personal bests. I guarantee you have the opportunities to catch a fish of a lifetime down there with us.
Lake El Salto, again, I think this is the best known big fish lake in, you know, the Americas. But you've got a newer lodge too, Lake Picachos. And this is not a destination to be ignored, is it?
It is not. So we've been open about 7 years now. It was dammed up and stocked with tilapia and the Florida strain largemouth, and man, did it really take over. They just flooded all the forest, and it's got the cover in it, it's got the feed, and the numbers are amazing. It's not uncommon to go and catch 250 bass in one day between two guys in a boat. Just phenomenal, phenomenal fishing, and we believe it's another Lake El Salto in the making. They just keep getting bigger and bigger each year.
Did you say 200-plus bass a day for two anglers in a boat?
Oh, yes, I did, and it happens quite often.
Wow.
Lots of fish in this lake.
That is amazing. And folks, I was actually just on the website for Anglers Inn International at anglersinn.com. They post pictures of their catches on a frequent basis, and there's an October catch from Lake Picachos. Absolute hog of a bass. They are not small there either. Let's talk a little bit about the seasons. I understand you're actually fishing now. That was surprising to me. What are the seasons for these two lodges north of Mazatlan?
Well, John, our fall season, we actually start around October 1st every year. By October, the rainy season has ended, and we fish all the way through the end of July each year. Come August and September, the rain starts falling, the skies get gray, and that water starts coming way, way up. You know, they're irrigation lakes, the water goes down, and then when it starts raining, it fills them right back up. It covers all that brand new green growth, all the grass that's growing. The tilapia love to feed in it, the shad, and of course the bass love the tilapia. That's what makes these lakes so good, is just it replenishes every year. So during the rainy season, you know, we're actually going through and, you know, cleaning up the lodges. We're making modifications to the boat. We're repainting the boats. We're getting everything ready for your season because we want you to have the best trip of your lifetime when you come to visit us.
So August, September closed, but everything else throughout the year is wide open. I love this. Got to ask, a lot of folks, myself included, want to fish in Canada, but we still can't do that because the border's closed. What's the situation in Mexico?
Well, in Mexico, we have no restrictions as of now. Of course, that could always change. You know, you just need to contact us for updates. But right now, there's no restrictions to get to Mazatlan for us to pick you up and get you to the lodges. However, coming back to the United States, the U.S. government requires a negative COVID test 72 hours before you come home. And we will, once you come down with us, we actually provide that for you free of charge at the lodge. And we'll have some medical professionals come in, do a quick rapid test, give you the proper paperwork to get you back on the airplane and get you home. So we've got you covered there.
Love it. Absolutely love it. And folks, if you don't have a COVID test, you can just walk across the Rio Grande. I understand that's a way where you don't have to get COVID tested to get the United States. But let's put politics aside, get back to fishing. So let's walk through what one of these trips looks like in terms of how many days, how many nights. Walk us through a trip to either Lake El Salto or Lake Picacho.
Well, we have two different ways you can go. Our standard four-night, three-and-a-half-day trip at either lake, we can book you in. You come in, you'll stay lodging for 4 nights. We pick you up at the airport in private vans. You'll have 3.5 days of fishing, depending upon which lake, El Salto or Picachos. It works either way. All your meals, drinks, open bar, alcohol included, laundry service, your guide, your boat. There's nothing extra that you got to take care of. You just got to get the Mazatlan and we handle it all from there. However, we do offer a combo trip if you want to experience the best of both worlds, catching the numbers of the fish at Lake Picachos. We do a 6-night, 5-day trip, 3 nights, 2.5 days at Picachos right after lunch. We'll get you in the vans and get you over to Lake El Salto to go after the giants, the true grandes in Mexico that live in Lake El Salto. So you'll have 3 nights, 2.5 days there. And again, everything's included once we pick you up.
I got to tell you, folks, I'm going to share a little secret with you here. I'm actually heading down to Mexico to fish with Mike and some of the other folks that are going to be there. And the dates I'm going to be there, May 8th through the 13th. Now, I guess I didn't even ask, am I just fishing at Lake El Salto or am I fishing at both lakes?
On this trip, John, we're going to be doing 5 nights, 4.5 days at Lake El Salto only. I want to get you down to the best bass lake in the world to get your personal best. And in 4.5 days, I'm pretty confident we can do that for you.
I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to do that too. And I've got to ask, are there any openings if any of our listeners want to join us on this trip?
We do have a few openings left. One of the groups that I personally host, and we're glad to have you with us, John, and we'd love to get some new folks down here. But yes, just give me a call, Michael Whitlow, or you can look me up at michael.whitlow@anglersend.com. Send me an email, and we'd love to get you down there south of the border.
Again, folks, if you want to join me on the trip, and I'm not saying that's a great thing or not, but if you want to fish Lake El Salto for a few days, I'm going to be down there May 8th through the 13th, or you can book your very own trip anytime you want at Lake El Salto. Look for your personal best bass or catch tons of quality bass at Lake Picachos. Do it on your schedule anytime from October through July. Again, all-inclusive trip. Everything's taken care of. The restrictions are minimal, as you just heard. It's going to be the best bass fishing trip of your life. And the place to go to is anglersin.com. That's where you find the details. And Mike, why don't you give out your email and phone number again so folks can contact you directly to book?
Okay, yeah, you can call me at 509-378-2814. That's 509-378-2814. Or you can reach out to me at michael.whitlow@anglersin.com. Or you can go on the website and reach out and call our office, Anglers Inn, and tell them you talked to me and or you want to go with me. But they'll reach out and I'll get back to you just as quick as I can and we'll get you down there on a trip of a lifetime.
And one of the reasons you want to go with Michael, folks, is because Mike actually is from the Northwest. He's living in Texas now, but he has fished all of our Northwest waters. So he's going to be very familiar with the Northwest scene and he's going to be able to break it down in terms of the differences between fishing in Mexico, fishing in the Northwest. It'll be a real quality experience. His email, again, is michael.whitlow, Whitlow spelled W-H-I-T-L-O-W, at anglersin.com. That's michael.whitlow@anglersin.com, or give him a call, at 509-378-2814. That's 509-378-2814. Or go to anglersin.com, contact the staff once you've settled on a date and a package, and let them know you want to go fishing with Michael Whitlow, and maybe even go fishing with me between May 8th and the 13th, too. It's going to be a ton of fun. Michael, thanks so much for sharing this with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Well, you bet, and we are tickled to death to get you down there south of the border, and I guarantee you we're going to get you the best bass of your life, buddy.
I can't wait. You're back in with Northwestern Outdoors Radio. I'm John Cruz, and I've got a new book to tell you about. I think you're really going to enjoy if you love family camping or the thought of maybe being a ranger at a state or national park. It's called Trip Tales, and it's written by Roseanne McHenry. She's from California. She's had a lifetime of outdoors adventures with her family, and she's worked as a park ranger both at the national park level and state park level, too. Roseanne, great to have you on the show. Really enjoying your book.
Thank you for having me. Great to be here.
Let's start off with how you got to fall in love with the outdoors, and it all came from family camping adventures as a kid in California. Tell our listeners a little bit about your family and some of the places you went camping at that really formed this lifelong love of the outdoors for you.
I grew up in and around the San Francisco Bay Area, and my father only got 1 week of vacation every year. And so he would rent this tiny little teardrop trailer for a family of five, which was always real interesting how we all fit inside that thing. But we'd tool on down the coast to the Santa Cruz or Big Sur area, and we would just go camping for a week. And we had so many funny mishaps on these trips, but we loved being together as a family on our camping trips. It didn't matter that we were cramped together. We were just thrilled to be outdoors underneath the redwoods or playing in the forest, walking by the sea, jumping in the waves at the ocean, or sharing time together as a family, because my family had grown up there. My father and mother grew up in the Bay Area. They adored the ocean, the quiet of the redwood forest, and we all just really loved being together. So those trips every year, just spending time together as a family, and then day trips that we would make up and down the California coast, just gave me a tremendous love for the outdoors.
Well, it certainly inspired you to become a ranger, and you started off as a ranger with the National Park Service. Why don't you tell our listeners where you started and a little bit about your career, where you worked, that's covered in the book.
Well, I started out at Marin Headlands in the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. It's just directly north of the Golden Gate Bridge. There's this huge open area. It's just filled with spectacular beaches and beautiful valleys and coastal marshes and estuaries. And they were just opening up the Marin Headlands as part of the Golden Gate National Recreation Area in the mid-1970s. And so I went out there as a volunteer, and I just started giving guided walks and talks on the beach about the coastal geology of the area. And I'd meet people there at our little visitor center right out there at Rodale Cove and take them on guided walks and talks. And after about 6 months, they offered me a job as a national park ranger. And it was a great generalist ranger job. We did vehicle foot patrols. We did cliff rescue. I got to do horse patrol, which was really exciting. We patrolled on horseback all around the area. And I worked there for about two and a half years. And then I got the offer to come and work at Mount Rainier National Park in Washington. And I spent 2 summers working at Mount Rainier. And later I went on to become a California State Park Ranger and worked up and down different places in California, including the Gold Discovery Site in Coloma and the American River and lots of other places. But I missed the national parks. I eventually went back to work at Death Valley National Park in California, much more recently, actually, and worked out there for 7 seasons.
Oh.
So I've had a lot of really fun adventures and mishaps over the years.
Absolutely. What a wonderful career. You know, One of the stories in your book was about your time at Mount Rainier National Park, and bears show up in your stories from time to time, but this one was my favorite. You're actually giving one of those ranger-led campfire presentations, and you're interrupted by a sow bear with her cubs. Tell our listeners more about this.
I was right in the middle of a talk, giving a talk on logging in the Pacific Northwest, and people love that program. We clap and sing, tell logger ballads, and just people love learning all about it, and also learning that logging isn't necessarily a bad thing. But we were having a great time, and then all of a sudden, people started jumping up and screaming and running in all directions, and I was thinking, like, oh my God, what did I say wrong? And then I see this mother bear and two cubs come charging through the campfire circle, and the mother bear is going, aruga, aruga, and the cubs are like, wah! And I'm like, oh my God, people are screaming and running, and so I'm shepherding everybody out, and I go and hide behind the console, hide behind the big screen where we're showing the program. And pretty soon there's nobody left. So I just go back out and the campfire is crackling merrily along. Nobody left. So I just go and lay down on one of the benches and I look up at the night sky because it was beautiful there. Just gorgeous night sky and the stars are twinkling and I'm thinking, well, I guess I shouldn't be too upset. At least the local wildlife wanted to attend my program. I guess that means they approve of it.
That is an awesome story. And folks, that's just one of the stories you can hear in Trip Tales by Roseanne McHenry. And you can buy this book at Amazon.com. It's available right now. You know, of all the places that you worked, the state parks, the national parks, what was your favorite and why?
Oh, my absolute favorite was Mount Rainier. I loved that park. It was absolutely beautiful to work. The beautiful alpine lakes and snow-covered peaks and waking up in the morning to the sound of a glacial stream just tumbling by my window and just being able to greet people at that visitor center there. It's one of our oldest national parks and I think one of our absolute most beautiful. So that was without a doubt my favorite national park.
You know, when I got out of the service, and we're talking almost 30 years ago now, I really wanted to be a National Park Service ranger, a law enforcement ranger in particular. And I was an officer in the Army, and I thought it'd be a shoo-in. And on paper, my credentials were great, but I quickly learned it is not easy to become a ranger with the National Park Service. You, at least back then, you really had to pay your dues. You had to do exactly what you did. You had to just start off as a volunteer and then work some summers and hopefully get noticed by the superintendent and then maybe, just maybe, get brought on by permanent basis. Is it still like that today or is it a little easier to break in now?
It's still a challenge to get on board, but what I recommend to people who want to become a ranger is volunteer in parks because they're needed everywhere in almost every park. And most parks have really great volunteer training programs, and then the volunteering can lead to jobs, just like it did for me. And that way you build a relationship with the staff in the park where you want to work, get to know them, and that can easily lead to a paid job. And then the other thing is take classes on natural resource management. I mean, you can do that in community colleges, and that'll put you in the lead for the competition. And then the other thing is become a seasonal park aide, you know, work as a park aide, and that'll give you valuable work experience towards becoming a park ranger. Oh, by the way, the full title of the book is called Trip Tales from Family Camping to Life as a Ranger, because it's all about how family camping as a child and all of the crazy things that happened inspired me to become a national park ranger. And it was a national park ranger in Olympic National Park that actually inspired me. I mean, he had park ranger charisma. Everybody followed him around. He just had this mesmerizing quality. And when I met him, I was just so taken. I just thought, this is the job I have to do.
Oh, I love it. And I guess one more thing about volunteering at our parks. You know, a lot of our listeners, they're well past the age of starting a career as a national park or even a state park ranger. But like you said, volunteers are needed. And if you're retired, you can certainly volunteer and help out too, can't you?
Absolutely. And most parks are looking for volunteers. And like I said, they've got great training programs, and you can pretty much pick and choose the kind of volunteer work that you'd like to do. If you want to work in a visitor center, that's great. If you prefer doing resource management, or if you know something about construction, you have some handyman skills or handyperson skills. I mean, there's just huge variety of different ways that you can volunteer in any park, state, national, regional, county. But if you love the national parks like I do, and that's my first and greatest love, then go and volunteer. There's countless different ways that you can do that.
Okay. Well, great advice there. We have to go. But folks, if you want to enjoy a good read about family camping and about life as a park ranger, get a copy of Trip Tales from Family Camping to Life as a Ranger by Roseanne McHenry. You can get it at Amazon.com. Again, the title is Trip Tales from Family Camping to Life as a Ranger. The author, Roseanne McHenry. Roseanne, thanks so much for sharing this with us today on Northwestern Outdoors Radio.
Thank you, John.
Come to Oregon's Wallowa County for outdoors adventure. Hike, ride, paddle, fish, or sightsee to your heart's content. And then visit one of our wonderful towns, whether it be Joseph with its beautiful bronze statues, our county seat in Enterprise, or one of our charming small towns like Wallowa, Imnaha, or Troy, where you can eat, shop, and sleep before continuing your adventure the next day. Plan your visit now at WallowaCountyChamber.com. That's WallowaCountyChamber.com.
Sportsman's Warehouse is America's premier outfitter, full of the gear you need to succeed this hunting season. Firearms, ammo, archery equipment, decoys, clothing, boots, and more. You'll find it all at Sportsman's Warehouse. Better still, the knowledgeable staff can help you with tips and frequent in-store seminars, all designed to help you bag a trophy or a limit. Find a location near you or shop online today at sportsmans.com.
We've got time for one more shot of Northwestern Outdoors Radio with John Cruz.
It is hunting season. I think just about everybody knows that. A lot of you are out hunting as we speak. But if you need some last-minute gear, maybe some ammunition, maybe some hunter orange clothing, maybe a new pair of boots because you wore your last ones out, the place to go for all of this and more when it comes to hunting gear is the same. It's your local Sportsman's Warehouse store. They've been having some great hunt sales going on since early September, and those sales continue. So head on down to your local Sportsman's Warehouse store. They've got them all over the Northwest and the Western U.S. Get what you need, gear up so you can be successful in the field. And if you got a little bit of time, you can shop online anytime at their website, sportsmans.com. And now it is time for your Sportsman's Warehouse trivia question of the week. Are you into paleontology? That's not the question, but if you are, you might want to head to a little-known national monument near Kemmerer, Wyoming, that features an ancient lake full of fossilized fish, mammals, and birds from millions of years ago. I'd recommend you first check out the visitor center, maybe hike some of the trails, and then go on a fossil dig through one of the nearby commercial operations at quarries that offer you the opportunity to do some fossil hunting and even take those fossils home. Here's your question. What's the name of this national monument in southwest Wyoming? If you think you know the answer, you know what to do by now. Just go to our Facebook page at Northwestern Outdoors Radio. If you haven't already, please like and follow that page. Then look for the post thread where we've got the question and just give us your answer there. If you don't do Facebook, and I know more and more of you don't these days, and I get it, you can contact us through our website at northwesternoutdoors.com. Just shoot us an email and let us know the name of this national monument in southwest Wyoming that is really cool if you are into fossil hunting. One lucky person who guesses right will win that $25 gift card we give away every week from America's Premier Outfitter. My thanks goes out to Bill London, Programming Director at KPNW AM 1120 out of Eugene, Oregon, for letting me know about this very special place that is now on my bucket list to visit. As we begin to wrap things up, I'd like to repeat my invitation to join Michael Whitlow and I to go bass fishing in Mexico through Anglers Inn International. The dates are May 8th through the 13th. You can check out the details about fishing at Lake El Salto, possibly the most famous bass fishery in the entire world for big bass and lots of them. The website to go to is anglersin.com. That's anglersin.com. And then just contact the folks there and let them know you want to go fishing with Michael Whitlow in May, or shoot Michael an email at michael.whitlow@anglersin.com. It's time to go, but to all of you hunters out there, whether you're after deer, ducks, pheasant, or quail, as well as you anglers out there after walleye, bass, trout, and salmon today, and to each and every one of you spending some time outside this weekend, do enjoy it and don't take it for granted. It's the perfect time of year to be out there, and you'll be blessed for the experience too. Until next time, do take care, God bless, and make it a point to spend some time outdoors.